Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 372 of the Roguecast, recorded May 10th, 2022. Movie status.
All right, we are back. We're going to discuss this week the Doctor Strange movie and Strange New Worlds.
Yep.
It's an all strange all the time.
Yeah.
We will give you spoiler warnings on both those. I will close out the podcast with that. Before that, we'll talk about a pretty solid week of comics.
Strange comics.
Strange comics. There are no strange comics.
We'll give strange reviews.
Strange reviews. Yes.
if only Stranger Things had also come out.
That would have been perfect. Otherwise, the entire podcast would be very normal.
Yeah.
It's an entirely normal podcast.
Keep it real, fellows.
With a strange epilogue. So we had Free Comic Book Day this weekend.
Yeah, thanks for coming out, those of you who were able to make it. That was super fun.
For those of you who didn't, we're watching you.
Yeah, that's right. We've sent out the boys to
the
talk
boys?
To
you. From the show?
No, mobster boys.
Oh, mobster boys.
I thought you were talking about Wee Yui, and I'm like, oh, God.
Free Comic Day went really well. It was a good selection of comics. People seemed to be having a great time.
Yeah.
Busy. We had a good day.
And, it felt pretty safe in our, seemingly dwindling pandemic days. I feel like I never want to even say that.
Yep.
But
also, our staffer Serena dressed up as an awesome Squirrel Girl costume.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You dressed up as awesome. An awesome
Captain America
costume.
Nick was dressed up as a Jedi.
Yep.
We had a Black Cat drop by for a while.
Yeah.
It was fun.
And we had a team up. There was a fight, and then
yes,
y'all teamed up.
And then teamed up.
And had a Marvel team up.
Yes. Yes. Next up on the docket is Free RPG Day.
Yes.
Coming Saturday, June 25th. We haven't quite nailed down what we're going to have, but we know for sure we'll have free RPG stuff.
Yes.
It's always a good selection. Always a good chance to come out and try some indie RPGs, stuff like that.
I think people generally know about it, but, it's not the big to-do that, like, say, Free Comic Book Day is, where there's just tons and tons of material. It's a smaller affair, but it's the same basic idea.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hand out, like a couple of two, three RPG things, and kind of browse the tables.
We still have lines in the morning.
Yeah.
Still pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
This week for game stuff, we got some cool stuff in. We got Star Trek Missions, which is a new board game from the guy who did, Fantasy Ground or something? We'd never heard of the original game, but apparently it's well liked.
Fantasy Realms.
Yeah.
I've not just looked at it yet, but I'm intrigued. I am in Star Trek mode right now. So, yeah. We got Super Fantasy Brawl, which is a miniatures game that reminds me a little bit of Skylanders in its look. They've got
Super Dungeon Crawl.
It's basically a miniatures battle game. There's some expansions.
Yeah, you put together teams of fantasy warriors and stuff like that.
Indeed.
And yeah, it looks cool. We've seen that already kind of moving pretty quick. So it seems like people are digging it.
If you like the Warhammer Fantasy RPG, we got the next part of the Enemy Within saga, the Horned Rat,
yep.
Which brings in the Skaven, so you can play Skaven characters.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I know that, I think some of these are updates of, some of their classic adventures these are, their kind of big award-winning campaigns and adventures. So, very, very defining Warhammer RPG.
We got the co-op game Chronicles of Avel, mm-hmm. which looks like... I've not had a chance to try this yet. I've got a copy to try out, but it looks like a co-op fantasy kingdom-building game.
Yeah. I only going by what I saw in the box, it looked cool.
Yeah. We got Unlock Kids, which is the new escape room games that Asmodee does. This is the first one, does not have an app, so basically you can just play it with your kids, and it's like Mystery Detective Stories.
I assume the whole point is no looming timer over it, just a kind of fun time puzzle solving and strategizing with your kids.
We're not shoving kids out into an actual escape room.
No.
Hey, kids, we're going to try and build up some anxiety in you. That's not a problem these
Mom
days.
Mom and Dad need a break.
That's right.
We got Dice Miner, which is a game. It's a dice building game that I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're like Clan of Dwarves or something like that.
Yeah.
And then we got Sobek, which is a two-player game that's from Pandasaurus, the same people that do Dinosaur Island, Roar and Ride, and a bunch of other games.
Do they like reptiles at Pandasaurus?
They must like reptiles
Pandasaurus. I'm just like... You do an Egyptian crocodile god, and...
I mean, it says Saurus is right in the name, so they must,
Yeah, I guess
thing.
So.
Sobek, looked like a fun game. It's I forget the exact deal with it, but it looks like a really cool looking 2-player game.
Yeah, so it's always nice to come across a 2-player game.
I think we're seeing more of them.
Yeah, I think so too.
I feel like it's become a thing. All right, so going on to the news. On Free Comic Book Day, we did get the news that George Perez had died. Everyone knew this was coming. He had last year said, you know, he had cancer. It's not operable. I'm going to let it run out. And basically had, I guess, 6 months or so of basically time with his family and fans and sort of getting, feeling all the love.
It really, like, I don't want to say it's an ideal way, but, like, it did seem like he was able to do a lot of what you at least kind of hope you might be able to. Yeah. There were still lots of photos of him coming out looking as happy as he always did.
Yep.
Obviously, he was showing his failing health, but, like, the guy had a you know, sort of the light-up-the-room smile.
Yeah,
right?
And we got, I mean, because of this, we got a once-in-a-lifetime reprint of JLA Avengers. Now, it wasn't big enough for everyone, but they did reprint it, which was mainly to make him see that they would do it.
Yeah, we're keeping our fingers crossed that maybe that they'll go back to that. Well, who knows? Probably not likely, but hopefully.
But there was that. There was, you know, everybody talk about how much they loved his work. George Perez left this world knowing how loved he was, and that's
that is a rare thing, I think, for many creators. So that's pretty cool. And he was also like a legendarily nice guy too, with his trademark Hawaiian shirt.
Yep.
Randy, Nick, do you fall into Perez fandom? I didn't know if it was kind of too before your time or not.
I mean, I backtracked a little bit because I liked some of the properties he worked on, especially things like Teen Titans.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And I backtracked on that one and picked up a lot, if not all of the back issues of Teen Titans.
Yep.
Other than that, I mean, the smatterings of, like, Avengers that he did, I have read a few of them. Mainly because Randy told me to.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, the Teen Titans was kind of the...
Well, I mean, yeah, he was on it, like, forever, and that became, like, a hugely influential property. Randy, what was your... do you have any, like I'm going to interject myself in and say, for me, like, his biggest work for me was his work on Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And the late 80s, it was the... I was just drifting over to DC after they did Crisis on Infinite Earths and they were relaunching everything. And I decided to give Wonder Woman a shot because, A, George Perez was on it. And I was like, man, this guy's art... It looked like it was through the roof, like, some of his, like, most intense work he'd ever done, because he, like, had, like, this vision of Mount Olympus that looked like M.C. Escher did it with all these, like... You know, upside down stairwells and stuff like that. And, you know, I also liked it because it had, like, they were leaning into the mythological stuff. There was this kind of mythic adventure vibe to it. And Perez was, I think, just like co-plotter at first. Within, like, I feel like 6 issues was like either like the main plotter or like he pretty quickly moved to like the main guy.
Yeah.
And that showed that this, I don't know that he ever, like, duplicated how good he was on that, and I suspect that was because Karen Berger was editor and was shepherding him. But, like, that was such an amazing run for me. It's weird to say, but, like, I was nervous as a kid to get a comic that was, like, a female-led comic. I felt awkward about it. I was like, oh, I'm gonna be a weird guy buying girls' comics. Hey, it's a different time. That's the 80s for you. But I was like, man, I can't not read this awesome Perez comic.
I'm just glad that one's in print, because the Wonder Woman stuff is notable. And
there's a hardcover compendium coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's an Absolute Edition, which we should be getting in next week. And then all this Teen Titans stuff is in print as well. Like, DC's done a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I think for me, I was always more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe the first place I encountered Perez was on Infinity Gauntlet.
Oh, yeah.
Which he didn't finish, unfortunately. So Ron Lim stepped in. And Ron Lim was fine. But Perez, it's a whole different thing.
He did the first 3 issues?
The first three. I think he did the first
half. Do we know that why... I'm sure that's known. But do you know why he didn't finish it?
I don't know why, actually.
Because Perez is like... He was like a workaholic.
Yeah.
He famously would do these intensely jam-packed pages with hundreds of heroes and all that stuff. I saw somebody noting the other day... That meant that he was also having to think about what the coloring would be on them so that when these groups... So that, like, somebody with a blue cape and another character with a blue cape didn't have them next to each other, creating a weird visual...
Just look at Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was also, the interesting thing was, he was also known for nuanced, smaller things. Like, yeah. And that was, like, he was famous for that on Teen Titans, too. Like, these characters could be standing around in their, like, living room, and it's going to have a lot of character to it. Beast Boy is going to be clowning, reading some girly magazine, because that's who he was. And everybody would be doing something that brought out who they are.
Yeah.
And so he was good at intimate detail. He kind of did cinematic storytelling. Yep. Like, so much, like, So much stuff. A true loss to the world, and one of the, again, a sweetheart of a guy.
Well, and then, I mean, super influential. We lost him and Neil Adams within a week of each other. And
man, those guys are like the real deal as far as legends go. Yeah. They're like in a tier that are higher than almost everybody else. Like, there's a lot of artists that I love, but they're not that here. They just are not that influential. Sad news, but we tip our hat to George Perez. Yeah. And certainly, if there's anything, you know, if you're not that familiar with his stuff, or you want to try some stuff out, ask us. We'll see what we can turn up.
Yeah,
we
should, I mean, like I say, Infinity Gauntlet is that we have Infinity Gauntlet, we have Crisis on Infinite Earths, we have Wonder Woman, we have Teen Titans. That's a lot of his.
Mm-hmm. Those are some of the big ones.
I'm trying to think what his other like really notable stuff is. It's out of print.
We don't have any of his Avengers stuff, do we?
No, but I think they are going to put some of that back in print, the Busick and Perez Avengers.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was drawing it way back as far as the 70s, like when he was kind of still defining his style. Yeah. I remember I had an issue early on that was like from before my time.
Yeah.
I bought an old issue. I probably spent like $15 on it or something at the time, which when I was like 10 or 12 probably felt like just this princely sum.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was the issue after seemingly Ultron had killed half the Avengers.
Yeah.
They would later find out that they were in stasis, but like I didn't, like I was reading it almost though I think the way somebody in the 70s would have, which was like the characters didn't know. And there's this great scene where they're going off to fight him, and Thor's like, you know, we go to death, we will die fighting you, Ultron. And like Wonder Man is like, I'm kind of a part-time guy. He's not trying. It's just his internal monologue. Yeah. He's actually not trying to get out of it. He's like, I never thought we would actually die doing this. Yeah. And he's like trying to wrestle with the fact that they might be. Anyway, super awesome art by him. You know, he did a great job. I think he might have. I don't know if he designed that, the first cool-looking Ultron.
Yeah.
That wasn't like a little rolling trash can.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think that would have been around.
Maybe not. That might have been Buscema.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So like, yeah, he's done a bunch of Avengers, a bunch of Justice League, which I'm not sure any of that's in print, and it should be.
Yeah.
But his
run with Busiek on Avengers is definitely another big one.
But a lot of his, like, biggest stuff. Wonder Woman, Teen Titans, Crisis, Infinity Gauntlet, the ones that he's really known for, those are all in print, which is great. We also got news of the new Doctor Who.
Right.
Shruti Gatwa is his name.
Okay.
He is young. He is not African American. He's Rwandan Scotlandy.
Okay, but he's a black man.
Yeah, he was born in Rwanda and was raised in Scotland, and he's 29 years old, which makes him one of the youngest doctors. And he
is
was
it
in
the youngest.
I don't think he's the youngest. Well, I think Matt Smith might have been.
Oh yeah, I think I might have heard
pretty young
that.
As well. But definitely the youngest in a while. It says here actually. I think Upbeat Energy. So it's like not. He's. I don't know if he's the youngest.
He's on that show Sex Education with Gillian Anderson.
And he's fantastic in Sex Education.
And I just watched a little bit of that. I don't know if I actually saw the characters. Was he there right from the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, he's basically the co-lead.
Okay.
I was super excited about it. I did not see this coming. This is a big surprise for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think that this will probably get me back watching Doctor Who, because I loved him on Sex Education.
Okay. That's cool when you've got somebody who can inhabit a character with that kind of level of, charisma.
He's great. I can't wait. I'm super excited to see it.
Nick, thoughts?
No, I think it's cool.
Did you watch Sex Education?
I watched the first season of it, but it has been a while. So
do you agree with Randy that this guy is a good actor, or does he stink?
I can't remember.
Okay,
but I don't feel like he stinks.
Binary system, I'm sorry. That's as close as we get. Nick says he stinks.
Okay.
And then,
oh, by the way, when is the new season going to be.
Davies coming back to do it.
Okay.
I think it's
wonder what the vibe is going to be.
I don't know. He was the guy who shepherded the original Tenet run.
Yeah.
So
Did he also do the Eccleston run before that?
Yes.
I think, yeah.
Yep.
So he was there for the launch. I'm just wondering, if he's going to kind of like try and not change up his style completely. Nobody does that, but like have a new a different vibe or anything.
I'm going to guess there will be Daleks and Cybermen.
Yep.
And
very much. Yep.
Probably so. Although I think it'd be cool if they didn't do that.
Well, I think that's what people were complaining about the Jodie Whittaker stuff, is that it didn't have some of that stuff.
You know what's funny is like, my favorite episodes were almost never the ones that had the legacy villains in it.
Right.
They
were the Blinks.
Sometimes liked them, yeah. Honestly, whatever, just other weird stuff. Are You My Mummy and all that.
That one was a great one.
Anyway.
Okay, so other news, the Quantum Leap is getting a sequel 30 years later.
TV show. Okay.
It is going to be on NBC. It's been picked up for series.
Any Bacula?
So, Bacula apparently was attached and is no longer attached to it.
Nah.
He has a pilot in contention at DC, or at NBC, so maybe...
But he was maybe not going to be the lead anyway?
He wasn't going to be the lead. So...
So he's not Bacula.
The lead is... No, he is not Bacula. the lead is somebody named Raymond Lee.
Okay.
Who is also in AMC's Kevin Can Fuck Himself.
Okay. I only watch characters that have been on Sex Education, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ernie Hudson's in it.
Okay.
I don't recognize the other names.
Is Ernie Hudson going to be the dude?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe his Ziggy?
Yeah. So I never... By the way, I should say, I never watched Quantum Leap and only have a sort of vague sense of it. Did they ever say, like, why... What's his name? Sam something?
Yeah. I don't think they...
Why he was chosen?
I've never watched the pilot. He's a scientist. So he stepped into the accelerator and vanished.
And he help me out. He goes and he inhabits other people's bodies.
Yes.
And helps them through some sort of difficult time in their life.
Yes.
But is there?
And then once that's gone, he moves on to the next time.
And is he supposed to be doing it like to help them because God told him to? Does it fix a timeline thing?
We don't know.
Okay. But broadly speaking, he would help somebody through a rough time.
Yep. And Ziggy was this like holographic guy from the future who would help him.
Kind of a smartass.
But they couldn't get him. They couldn't get him back to the future. He didn't know how to get back.
Right.
So I don't know a lot of the. So this was a.
It always seemed like a neat idea. Like whenever I would catch glimpses of it.
It was an 80s formula show. So the backstory, and I'm sure we'll get a lot more developed like backstory mythology in this new version.
Did they do a thing where visually? You did Scott Bakula spend most of the time on the screen, or would it mostly be some other actor, and only like when they looked in a mirror would you see Bakula?
No, mostly you saw Bakula, but...
And it was the reverse of that, because if they looked in the mirror,
you'd see the person. But I know they do something like, oh, he's a girl trying to get into campus and be the first woman admitted into the legal program at some school or whatever, and he'd have to like suffer, you know, kind of try and be like, oh, here, this is what it's like to be somebody trying to break through the glass ceiling.
Yeah, the tagline was putting right what once went wrong and hoping each time that his next leap will be the leap home.
Right.
Okay. And of course this is famous for having an ending where like it
kind of
like,
dour.
It got kind of canceled, I think. And then
ran 5 seasons.
And the last thing it says is he never made it home, which is kind of like the Poochie died on the way back to his home planet. It's messed up, man.
Yeah. To drag the viewers through all that. But this is a chance where, like, if they can even get him as a guest star to reveal some sort of happy ending, even if it doesn't, they make a point to not contradict that. We were talking about this off mic.
Yeah, yeah.
Finding some new home, finding some place he belonged, whatever.
They need to, because that's a mean way to end a series.
Yes. It's time to fix that
yeah,
one thing.
That is, so this is written by Godfriended Me and Alcatraz duo Stephen Lillen and Brian Weibrandt.
Okay.
That's not great. I don't feel like either of those are particularly great shows.
I just had to look at the last episode. I'm sorry to backtrack a little bit.
Uh-huh.
But apparently it was filmed as either a series finale or a season finale because they weren't sure they were going to be picked up for season 6.
Uh-huh.
And when it was said that it was a series finale, they tacked on 2 screenshots at the very end.
Oh, that's mean.
At the very end of the thing saying that his wife never remarried and that he never returned home.
That's so mean.
That's horrible.
That is a couple of guys who are mad they got canceled.
Yeah. I mean, that would be awful.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I guess the fact that in a weird way that you could, like, tag on two sentences and it could seem so dramatically sad is some testament to some writing skills.
Well, I mean, Scott Bakula was great in it. Yeah. I mean, he was a fun character, and Dean Stockwell was always
You know what I think would be kind of interesting? Like, I feel like this kind of feels timely enough, you know, the notion of having empathy for people outside your circle is always going to be a relevant topic, right? It's relevant right now. I also could see almost a little bit of fun being had with, like, this notion of he'd be like, if he possesses somebody who's, like, I'm going to just say randomly Native American, would he be like, is this cultural appropriation? is it okay for me to do this? Like, I feel like they could have a little bit of fun with sort of touchy topics, maybe.
Yeah.
And also, but yeah, also be about sort of expanding perspectives and something that's, something that's still important right now. So,
yeah.
I wish it luck, even though I don't know anything about the show.
I've watched handfuls of episodes. I don't know, like, a huge connection to it, but...
Don Bellisario is still
involved.
He
is attached. Yeah, the original three creator is attached as a producer.
Are the fans called, like, Quantum Leapers?
They're called Quantumers. Quantumaniacs.
Leap Daddies.
Leap Daddies.
Are there Quantum Leap conventions? Or were there? Were there Leap Cons?
Yes, unfortunately, they never made it home.
Oh, man.
Their wife never remarried either.
All right, and then we've got some trailers that we watched.
Yes.
So there's a trailer for the new DC animated thing, Green Lantern Beware My Power, which seems to be sort of a new take on Jon Stewart.
Yeah.
Right. While also folding in elements from, Justice League Unlimited and the Justice League cartoon.
Because it's got Hawkgirl.
It has his connection, with Hawkgirl will still happen in this. It's interesting that kind of became a key part of the mythology for him.
I like that Green Arrow was so front.
Yeah, Green Arrow's in there. Yep.
Yeah, so it's in its way another hard traveling heroes story, but it's also a retelling of his origin, which we were discussing this off mic. We don't actually remember quite what Jon Stewart's origin is, where he got the ring from precisely. I don't think I've particularly read that story. And it looks like it's a Sinestro Corps story. So they will be the big bads.
It's definitely a space adventure.
But it also looks like it's delving into his back history a little bit with the war
being
stuff,
being a
sniper.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I don't know when the was he always a Marine? Because I feel like that got added later.
I think that got added later.
Because he was an architect when I was reading it.
Yeah.
But was that too close to Kyle, who was a
maybe
an
so
architect?
When they decided to make a Marine?
Yeah, they had to change a little bit.
Sure. Well, there's only two things you can be. You can be a Marine or an architect.
So Kyle was an architect?
No, Kyle was an artist.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was a frivolous artist.
Yeah,
not one of those serious artists.
Are you saying that Kyle is a slacker? A slacker
100%.
Artist?
100%. That's why I like him. I also think none of us have been, keeping up exactly closely with the DC animated movies. So I'm not, it looks fine.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'll particularly seek it out. I've been in a little bit of a Green Lantern mood lately because I was running a DC Superheroes RPG with a lot of cosmic sci-fi elements in it. But even so, this doesn't, quite look like it's going to scratch the itch of that. Maybe the Sinestro Corps stuff will. I'll listen to see what people say about it.
Yeah.
If it's getting good buzz, I might check it out.
I will say, Aldous Hodge is the voice of Jon Stewart.
Oh, that's
cool. Which is pretty good.
Aldous Hodge
casting.
Is playing Hawkman in Black Adam.
It's true.
Who is Aldous Hodge?
Invisible Man.
Oh, okay.
The friend.
Yeah, yeah. That the one slightly weird thing about Invisible Man is that I know we were supposed to... they did a good job of making me scared for her in that movie, but her cop friend was a giant. He's a man mountain.
Yep.
He's super muscular and he looks like he could wreck anybody who got into that house. So to some degree, I was like, she's safe from the Invisible Man.
I think that was what you're supposed to believe.
Yeah, that's true. That's
she
true.
She was supposed to feel safe.
If you're invisible, though, your strength goes up like 20 points.
It's true.
Yeah, that is true. And you can take all sorts of damage.
Yep.
However, downside, paint. Paint is a problem.
Paint is your biggest weakness when you're invisible.
It's a maybe.
We also saw the trailer for Crimes of the Future, the new weird as hell thing from David Cronenberg, which Cronenberg is known for body horror, but man, this is the most Cronenberg thing I've ever
seen.
This
is about a society that has gotten to the point where it looks like body modification is like the new sex.
Yeah, what did he say? Surgery
is new sex.
Yeah, because he's like, they've eliminated pain or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
You know what's weird is, I I hope that Cronenberg isn't approaching this from, like, some kind of weird conservative perspective of, like, where he's, like, sees, like, piercing and, like, sort of tattoos and general body modification stuff as being so egotistical, like, that it's, like... Because he's... It looks like... Like, you've heard of people who, like, get kind of addicted to surgical practices.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that's what this is commenting more, like, people who are in the extremes of it.
Right.
But the notion of that becoming mainstream where everybody kind of becomes an extremist... There's, like... There was a weird dude with, like... Like ears and stuff growing out of forehead and stuff.
I was gonna say, I think this is more Cronenberg's desire to want seven ears attached to his head.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't think Cronenberg is a shamey guy about body body modification. I think he's all into it.
I think every movie he has made has some aspect.
But
of body horror.
He's usually kind of a bit about being revolted with something. Like, you know, everybody, like, The Fly kind of, I think, was meant to be this notion of sort of, like, an AIDS metaphor, where there was this transmissible sort of, like, infection, and he didn't feel like he was in his own body anymore. Like it's usually something kind of bad, it seems, in his movies. Have you ever seen the movie Crash? There was people who, based on that 60s book about people who got off, basically, by the hyperadrenaline rush of being in a crash, and they would have sex right afterwards, sometimes while they were injured and stuff.
But then there was, like, Dead Ringers and Existenz.
I never saw Dead Ringers. I know that was about an evil gynecologist or something.
Yeah, wasn't it?
Alfred, he was just trying to...
Jeremy Irons, wasn't
to it? Give women anxiety for the rest of their lives with
true.
That.
But I think it was Jeremy Irons, right?
I think that's right. I actually haven't seen that much from him. I need to see the I think the core of, like, some of his stuff, Videodrome.
Mm-hmm.
I remember my brother used to watch that sometimes, and I would watch it, and I'd be like, oh, that's weird. I remember a dude holding a gun, and, like, it, like his wrist, like, veins grew into it or something like that. It was...
Existenz was sort of, like, an extension of that, though, because it was, like, alien tech that was kind of, like... biological, kind of, like, grafted to people, and
I even remember a scene that I've only in his movie I've only glimpsed, Naked Lunch, that had that. Yeah.
He's got some things that he likes to explore.
He does. Never has a director had a more thematic theme.
And his son is also like that as well. His son made a movie last year, and it was interesting.
Is he really into it, or is he just into it to make the big bucks?
No, I don't think you've
the
made
big body mod bucks.
Yes.
I don't think you make this many body horror movies without it being kind of your, like, something you're
your
really
jam.
Interested in.
Now, is there a way to say, like, did y'all get, like, a plot out of this? It is, I think, an unnerving and interesting trailer.
It is. And Viggo Mortensen is... I don't know what the plot is either, but...
More of a mood teaser trailer.
But it's Viggo Mortensen, which I tend to like, although...
Yeah. Kristen Stewart.
Although I never watched Eastern Promises or, what was the
History
other?
Of Violence.
History of Violence, apparently.
I didn't realize both those were Cronenberg. He's probably been working with Viggo Mortensen a lot.
History of Violence, is that... That was
a comic.
Graphic
novel, yeah.
Okay, I did see that one.
I thought I did, but I can't remember if that's the one I saw.
Because that had him and Ed Harris in it, and I did see that, and that was solid. I can't believe that was a Cronenberg film.
Yeah, and there's no body horror in it, so...
Changing it up a little bit. Anyway, yeah, I feel like it's like the lesson here is go ahead and watch the trailer if you're a weirdo.
It is a red band.
I was
going to
say,
freaky.
It's a red band.
It, yes, it could disturb you. There's a point where someone, it looks like they're about to kiss a wound, a surgical wound.
Yep.
And so just brace yourself for that.
It's weird. It's weird and great and gross.
Oh, he was also responsible for Scanners. Okay.
Okay, yeah, I've seen Scanners.
The last trailer is for a movie I never thought would actually come out. Avatar Way of Water, a.k.a. Avatar 2, a.k.a. 14 years later, James Cameron has made another movie.
Yeah. I guess he was true to his promise.
He's been underwater developing new technology to create this movie.
You know what's funny? I feel like we've talked about Avatar before because maybe the comic came up at some point. They did a miniseries or two from Dark Horse.
We've talked about it. I like to make fun of it every now and then.
And that's the funny thing. It was for a good several years, it was the highest grossing movie of all time.
Yep.
And it's been dethroned, but it's still up there. But it also got, like, there was almost an immediate turnaround where people were like, oh, that movie was kind of dopey, Dances with Wolves in Space and stuff like that. And yet, I've been kind of watching the reaction of this on some message boards and stuff like this, and people seem to be, it's almost like that vast span of time, they forgot that they decided that they didn't like it, and they're like, oh, that looks interesting, I'll check that out. It's gone back to just like, I wonder what, like, if Cameron could pull it off again.
I want...
I feel like, to some degree, Cameron feels like a guy who, and I don't know anything about his, like, really about his personal life, but he feels like a guy who kind of became a pothead, kind of lost the intensity that drove his earlier movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I broadly agree. Like, I want a better environment.
Are you saying
too?
That the pot staved off the murderous machine?
The halfling's leaf has addled his brain.
It's like, we must come to a better place of this peaceful existence.
He does seem like a little bit like dopey hippies sort of guy sometimes. Yeah. And again, I agree with probably his broad environmental policies. But yeah, he kind of did the white savior version of that.
Yeah.
That's it. I know he's like, he's the kind of guy who puts his money where his mouth is, and probably, and I kind of want this to be good. I don't think it's going to be great. I don't think that's even possible.
No,
I think the spectacle will be good.
It looks pretty.
Yeah, I think it's going to look gorgeous.
It's another mood trailer. This one shows like the Navi people with doing sort of more underwater stuff, which I'm sure, you know, like, he's been perfecting all his new cameras and tech and figure out how CG works for underwater effects.
Who does the music for Avatar?
It was James Horner originally, but James Horner is now dead.
Yes.
In the intervening 14 years, he has become deceased. He hit a mountain, unfortunately, with a plane. He didn't just, like, walk up to it and bump it and die.
And then it fought back.
Oh, you want some of this? Just a boulder comes tumbling down.
He actually got to fight with Man Mountain Marco.
Because I don't even remember what happened at the end of the first one. Did they kill...
They stopped the army was going to forcibly take, like, basically the rare mineral or whatever from them, and they fought them off.
And that was going to kill their world tree, right?
Isn't that what it is?
Yeah. They fought him off, and I think there was kind of a question of, like, okay, well, now you've, like, probably aggravated the galactic might of the equivalent of, like, Halo's UNSC.
Yeah.
Like, now, but, you know, this is a very sort of straightforward kind of a, you know, Vietnam-ish type scenario where a smaller guerrilla fighting force wrecked a more capable technologically force. I don't know if he's got a story to tell beyond that. I would love it if he, like, in some way heard some of the criticisms and went to do a deeper dive. But I feel like he's, like, you know, he hit such a sort of height of fame. He's, I think, always had an ego.
Yeah.
That it's hard for me to imagine that any of that got through to him.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm already bored by it. it looks pretty. The thing is, I don't really care if I see this or not, but I do know if I want to see it, I want to see it on a big screen.
Yeah,
like, it's gonna be a movie there's not a main movie you want to watch on your TV. So I'm probably gonna go see this movie in the theater, knowing I don't really want to see it.
I'm gonna torture James Cameron and watch it on an iPhone. Take that, James Cameron. Make another choice.
Oh, all the directors will come after you for that, Nick.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. especially Lynch.
Except for all the people who made stuff for Quibi.
I'd have been rethinking this.
No, Nick, you're a Quibi lover now.
Oh dear.
I don't know if I don't have much to say on it. It's other than it'd be nice if it was cool. I like the idea of, like, seeing these sort of alien worlds brought to life. But it needs to be married with at least something of an engaging story. And I'll say this, I guess, for the original Avatar, it was pretty watchable. It was, like, very tropey, but, like, that stuff when they first arrive on the planet and you're just kind of watching the procedural thing for, like, Marines offloading and stuff. Yeah. He captured some of that Aliens vibe of, like, what it's like to, like, sort of set up a beachhead in this case, or, you know, gear up on a military base. And he usually thinks about the sort of realistic side of it, so that the thing where they plug in and would put themselves in these, what, cloned bodies of
Avatars,
the Navi?
That's what they put them in.
Yeah, but where do they even get the bodies? They're not, like, they didn't, like, steal them. They're, like, grown.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Like, that all, like, had sort of a feeling of reality. And by the way, I remember when our friend Mandy went and did to Disney World, they have, like, a ride based on, like, a theme park thing.
Yeah.
And she said it was, like, incredibly cool. So maybe they need to talk to the people who made the ride.
How many times did you guys see this movie?
I've just seen it once.
I saw it once in the theater.
I've seen it a few times.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
That's why you remember, because I remember nothing. I remember... there's a guy with a battle suit at the end.
Sigourney Weaver was in it.
That's what I remember.
She was the scientist behind it.
Yep.
There was a scary general guy who had the white hair.
Yeah. He was the guy in the mech at the end.
Yep. Jake Sully went off as a Navi person, and he tripped and fell down, and he ran into Zoe Saldana,
yep.
The pretty Navi lady, and then they hooked up, and then he's like, oh, I see your people are oppressed, and he's like, let's beat up some dudes, and they did.
Okay, that sounds about right.
That was the end.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Well, James Cameron has had 14 years to come up with a better story, so let's hope he has.
Yeah.
I have this feeling he had the draft of it back then.
Oh, I think
and
yeah.
It's just all been technology changing.
Here's the thing. You remember how we were all excited for the prequels of George Lucas then delivered the story that he had been building out to? We're not even excited about the Avatar sequel, and James Cameron has been doing this for... I don't have a lot of hope for this being good. But I would love to be wrong.
Has he been living and breathing Avatar for 14 years?
He's been living and breathing water.
Yeah, just like the characters in The Abyss.
He's
yeah.
made he's made some Titanic documentaries
right.
in that time, right?
Yeah, probably.
Okay, I'm just yeah. making...
I think he, like... I think he actually, like, not just documentaries, I think he actually does, like, go down there and...
Well, I also think know, he's, like, perfected technology for underwater,
yeah.
you know...
Yeah, even there was a whole lot of work on underwater cameras.
Whoever,
yeah.
like, runs, like, probably some Titanic museum or the recovery efforts things are probably like, this guy became our god. he probably brought in so much money and
However,
so much technology.
He keeps talking about wanting to raise the Titanic.
Is that a thing?
No.
Oh, okay.
I'm kidding. I'm just thinking it's something he would probably wants to do.
He wants to keep it under the water, Nick. All right, we are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, May 11th, and this is a pretty big week. There's a post Free Comic Book Day week. So there's a few things that slipped, did not make their Free Comic Book Day debut. And then a couple notable number ones.
And some surprisingly, like, oh, some maybe things we weren't looking forward to that ended up being quite cool.
Yeah. So first up, let's talk about Blood Syndicate Season 1. This is DC's newest milestone book. Blood Syndicate, unlike Icon and Rocket, Static, most of the ones that have been around, Blood Syndicate has never returned. Like, they had their original one, but they have not really been around again. So I'm glad to see them going back to these characters. And
the street gang that got powers from the Big Bang event, right?
Yep.
In there.
Although I'm not sure that's true anymore.
Okay.
So this one, they one of the things I've had an issue with is the milestone stuff of late is that it felt a little bit like retread. Like they were doing some of the similar stuff that I'd already read. This is a new Blood Syndicate. Basically, it starts with the character known as Tech Nine. And he is basically over in the Persian Gulf. In a fictional country.
Okay.
Sadakwa. But basically, he's coming back from Afghanistan, Iraq, essentially. And he comes back to to Dakota, where he's from. And he's talking to their people there. And basically finds out there's been all these gang wars going on, and that they're superheroes now. And is getting involved with gangs. Meanwhile, Holocaust, the guy from the Blood Syndicate, is basically consolidating all the gangs. And it's sort of like we're meeting all these characters and they're living in this world of like this big gang war that's sort of consolidated everything. And I'm super looking forward to seeing where they go with this. Because we only get the slightest hints of the powers and stuff, but we don't know like where they all came from.
Right.
We don't start off with they're a street gang on Paris Island or a reporter. Like it is a completely different take. But it is a very interesting one.
Okay, that's good.
That's really nice art. Chris Cross, the original artist, is one of the artists. I'm not sure if he's the only artist on this.
Yeah, Chris Cross always been good.
Yeah, I'm looking to see at the credits if he's listed as like... Oh, so he is. So it's a new, different inker, but it is him. It is Chris Cross doing art. And written by Jeffrey Thorne, who's a guy who's been doing Green Lantern for a while.
Yep.
This is a good first issue. I liked it. Also super fun this week. DC's Jurassic League 1 of 6.
Yes.
This was a joy.
It looked so dumb from the ads, and I was just like, in the off chance it's dumb fun, I'll be on board it. It is Justice League members, as like in a kind of stylized dinosaur prehistoric past. There, it's the Justice League forms.
Yep.
In an era where like dinosaurs that are kind of like quasi-humanoid dinosaurs coexist with cavemen and are kind of sometimes their protectors, sometimes the bad guys for them.
Yep.
In other words, superheroes and supervillains.
Yep.
And they especially highlight Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And we all liked it, right?
Yes.
Yes.
It is just ridiculous and stupid. Who's the guy who's writing it, Randy?
It's written by Juan Gedeon, who's also the artist, and Daniel Warren Johnson. Daniel Warren Johnson, of course, from Beta Ray Bill. Yeah. And
he did the Wonder Woman series.
Murder Falcon?
Murder Falcon, I think, is him. No. They're right. That's
what was the Wonder Woman thing he did for...
Wonder Woman...
The apocalyptic thing, yeah. This is a guy who kind of likes kind of goofy metal stuff.
Yep.
So... The two-page splash that opens this, the second and third pages, is a dinosaur dressed like Batman leaping across the outskirts of Growltham City.
Yep.
Saying something evil is in this jungle.
Yes.
It's great. Yeah. It just...
they are all sort of themselves in a way.
Yep.
Superman is like a kind of, sort of brontosaurus-y man. And he is the kind of, like, in some ways, the true blue dino hero, where some of the others, like Aquaman, is kind of more fierce.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, and, like Superman is letting, like, the little caveman kids ride on his tail while he wags it around, his giant tail.
Wonder Woman's like a Stegosaurus.
Wonder Woman's like a Stegosaurus. Or is it a Triceratops?
Triceratops.
Oh, it's Triceratops.
Yep.
And that is not like a tough one to do, because you would think that you'd be like, oh, I guess they're gonna try and find some kind of dinosaur where you can sort of draw it sexy or whatever. They're like, no, Triceratops. The art is super good.
Yeah, it is.
I loved how they drew them and how the world setting looks. I would not in a million years have thought I would have enjoyed this.
It's super fun.
So yeah, everybody should check it out. So what's the name of it again?
Jurassic League.
Jurassic League, yes.
Marvel has a couple of big ones this week. Captain America: Symbol of Truth, which is the first. There should be two series, one focusing on Steve Rogers, one on Sam Wilson. This is the Sam Wilson one.
This was really good.
It's really good. It's got Sam and the new Falcon.
Let me quick ask. I don't think any of us were huge on the special that they did last week or the week before.
No.
Was it the same writer?
No, I think, I'm not sure. There were two writers. This might be the same.
Or maybe
writer,
they were like working together or something.
I don't know.
But in any case, this one, where that one didn't grab us, this one did. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah.
But.
So this is basically Sam is working for the U.S. government alongside. He's not working for the U.S. government, but he and Falcon are on a mission. They open in the action, which I always like to do. They're trying to track down this train load of super soldier serum. There's some big reveals in there. And then they flash back a little to him getting the assignment from Misty Knight, who he's sort of a will-they-won't-they relationship with. And it's really good. It's action-heavy. It's got good character stuff. It reminds me a lot of what I liked about the Falcon and Winter Soldier opening stuff.
Yeah.
There's also some Wakandan stuff going on in here.
Okay.
It's a really good first issue. I haven't had a Captain America run that I've really loved in a while, and this one has me very excited to see more of the character. There's also Hulk versus Thor, Banner of War. This is Alpha. I think he's going to cross over between Hulk and Thor. Basically, this is Hulk and Thor throwing down.
Yep.
Donny Cates is writing both characters.
And it's the very specific versions that are going on right now, which anybody who's reading Hulk knows there's some crazy stuff going on in that. I don't know actually where Thor is. I know the book does, I saw very clearly catches you up.
Yep. Yeah. If a lot of people just like the big throwdowns between these guys, this is a big throwdown between these guys. Moon Knight, Black, White, and Blood. This is the latest in these Black, White, and Blood anthologies that Marvel does.
Yep. And DZ does a bunch of variants that are similar, that are like black and white with a single color in this.
Yeah. Yep.
Mix.
This one, it's an anthology of Moon Knight stories. There's a Jonathan Hickman, Chris Bacalo, Mark Guggenheim. And then the third one is by a creative team I didn't know. Different. One of them is sort of sci-fi-y. One of them is like a almost more jokey superhero with Spider-Man. And then there's one that's more of a crime story. So they definitely like all over the map. But if you like Moon Knight, more Moon Knight.
Just like all the different versions of Moon Knight. You get three of his iterations here.
Boom has a new book called Grimm. Did you guys get a chance to read this?
I did. I liked this one. This is sort of a new play on kind of the Grim Reaper and...
Oh, right. I made the sign for this, but I did not read it yet. It talked about this woman dies and is, like, inducted into this afterlife thing of becoming a Reaper.
Yes.
Where you transfer, like, the dead souls or ferry them to whatever, the afterlife or whatever.
Which is not similar. There's a concept like that for the Dead Like Me.
Yeah.
The show Dead Like Me, where basically there wasn't one Grim Reaper...
Right.
There are people who are Reapers.
But according to the thing that I read in this one, she doesn't remember how she died, and there seems to be some mystery about it, and she's like got to kind of investigate her own death while, I guess, being a Reaper.
Yeah, she doesn't remember how she died, and this first one has her bringing somebody over from the world who was not ready to go, and yeah, it's good world building. It's really beautiful art. This reminds me of, in similar ways, Many Deaths of Layla Starr, which Boom also did, which I kind of liked. And this is a good sort of high concept first issue.
Yeah.
Also, I know it's already sold out distribution, so it's going to be one that people are going to be jumping on, I'm sure.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, speaking of things I didn't expect to like, there's a new Red Sonja. We don't tend to order a lot of Red Sonja off the shelf. Just hasn't been a big thing for us. But, because it was supposed to come out Free Comic Day, I ordered
it. And this is not quite Red Sonja, or rather, it's Red Sonja's daughter.
Red Sitha. Who is like a snarky, badass mercenary.
Yep.
This was super fun. She kidnaps this girl from a cult sacrifice, and then she's like owes money to people. She actually gets the money to pay them back, and instead of giving it back to them, she gambles and drinks it all away.
So they're keeping with the Conan style.
And then she winds up on a boat. It's almost Rat Queens-like.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's some definite...
It's pretty out there. Then she winds up fighting a big Cthulhu god. Like, it's big epic fantasy adventure, but it's also sort of goofy Robert Howard-y tropes. I really enjoyed it. It's super fun.
Actually, I don't think goofy figures too much into Robert E. Howard, so
it's a goofy version of Robert Howard.
Right,
tropes,
right.
It doesn't feel like a Robert E. Howard book, except that it does in ways.
I mean, that makes sense because we've also had something like 40 or 50 years of comics that are essentially quite faithful of trying to create his tone. And so it sort of makes sense to see a slightly maybe more hybrid version.
Yeah, you know, Conan is always about what a badass he is, and the humor usually comes from the horrible things he's doing to the villain, to the other people.
Yeah.
This is more, the humor is more of like, she is a good-natured screw-up who's actually quite powerful, who doesn't see the consequences of her actions. So
that's how I feel, a good-natured screw-up who doesn't realize how powerful they are.
Sure.
Yeah. I believe this is like co-written or written by Mirka Andolfo.
Mirka Andolfo, yeah. So if you like her stuff. But it was surprisingly fun. Frankfurt says, Death Dealer is much more of a straight Robert E. Howard-y type thing. It's a faceless mercenary with a powerful magic axe who can't take his helmet off.
Does he deal any death in the first issue?
He fights some giant crocodiles. He fights some wolves. It is a very violent, and then there's sexy ladies in it. It is a very more R-rated fantasy comic.
Okay.
So, yeah. If you like that kind of thing, this might be the kind of thing you like. Transformers Last Spot Standing is weird.
Did you guys read it? What is it?
No, nope. I have not.
So, there is a world that's very Western. It looks like a Western town.
I noticed on the cover that silhouetted Transformer looks like he had like a poncho like the Man with No Name.
But they have like alien horses and actual like cars and buggies and technology. So it's like a Westworld kind of thing.
Okay.
And then a Rodimus Prime crashes into it, maybe doesn't have his full memories, and becomes like the Man with No Name of this world.
Weird. Is this... I thought this was like... I know that IDW will soon lose the Transformers license.
This has nothing to do with them losing... This is not like their last Transformers story. That is like War's End.
Okay.
This is a standalone story... Last Spot Standing that very much seems to be, what if Yojimbo was a Transformer?
Okay. Well, that has some interest for me.
Yeah.
So this is their last Ronin story.
It kind of is. It's very strange, but also kind of intriguing. I like the sort of Western tropes and stuff. DC produced Batman the Night Compendium. If you missed the first three issues of Chip Zdarsky's Batman Year Zero that he's doing, this collects those three issues into one little compendium, which that series of 12 issues is still ongoing. But that one's... I know, Dave, you were digging that for a while.
I've, like, lost track of it a little bit. But yeah, it was like he was going to some sort of interesting nooks and crannies and unexpected places as far as Batman's origin.
Image has a book called 8 Billion Genies.
Yeah, I kind of like this one.
I really enjoyed this.
This was my pick.
Yeah, if you were doing picks, this would have been my pick as well.
Written by Charles Sewell, who's written everything from like indie comics like what's the Wizard
one? Curse Words.
Curse Words. Curse Words.
Well, this is the team from Curse Words. I'm Ryan Brown, the artist on it.
But he's also like written like Star Wars and She-Hulk and other
Daredevil.
Wolverine, the Death of Wolverine, and
yep.
stuff like that.
Yep.
So he's been all over the place, but this is him doing his kind of anarchic indie style.
Yep. Yeah.
And
I mean, this is, if you like Curse Words, this is very much like it.
But it starts at a bar, but it has as its central premise that every single person on Earth gets a private genie that gives them one wish.
Yes.
And all hell breaks loose.
Yes.
Because it all happens at the same time. Rather cleverly, the bar owner's first and only wish is that his bar be free from the effects of anybody else's wish.
Yeah, I thought that was a great
and the people inside it are free of any other wish.
Right, if you're in the bar, you're, you're in a safe zone.
Yeah. And that leads to some interesting things. And then
a fantastic splash page.
There's a bit where someone throws open the door and you see just the chaos of what happens in the world where everyone has one wish.
Right, like, you know, imagine, like, you know, like a monster truck driving by, like, driven by a dinosaur, and just, like, it is, like, crazy over the top and funny. There's some other, like, subplots and little things turning in it, too, that will give it, I think, it's sort of some depth, but it's clearly meant to be kind of an anarchic fun book.
Yep. Yeah, it was a great first issue. I really enjoyed it. And
also,
nice art.
By the way, the visualization, of the genies was kind of cool. They look like weird little digital imps.
Yeah.
I don't even know quite how to describe them other than it's a neat effect.
Yeah. This was definitely one of the big... I think this is maybe one of my favorite books of the year when all is said and done. It was really...
Oh, he's down.
I'm just saying. Down. It's one of the best first issues they've had in a while, so...
On that, I'll agree with that. I don't know if... It's too soon. Just one issue.
I'm just saying there's not been a ton of great books this year. I needed a great book, and this was one of them. We did get Image Firsts back in, for those of you missing the dollar comics. Basically, we ordered the ones that we really like. So the first issue of Astro City, the first issue of Department of Truth, first issue of Robert Kirkman and Chris Samnee's Firepower, first issue of Hack Slash, first issue of indie superhero Radiant Black, and the first issue of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' Kill or Be Killed. They are all a dollar each if you want to sample it. Or, if you have never read one of these books... and you are a podcast listener, just come in and say, hey, Randy said you would give me one of these books. We will give you one of each of these books if you want to try them out, because I think once you read them, you'll be hooked and want the trades.
Yeah, it's true.
So this is really just for our benefit. This whole thing is a scam of us. We're just trying to sell things.
Pipe down, Dave.
I see through us.
But yeah,
I'm calling it out.
A bunch of great books to try, and
yeah,
these are all
yeah,
really
that's
good
a great
first
list
issues.
Of those. Like I think I've read everything in there, but in particular, Radiant Black because it's a new one, and I was behind the curve on that one, and I snuck a read of the trade one day, but like yes, it would have been convenient to have this comic as sampler.
Yeah. Other than that, there's a few. You know, Superman Son of Kal-El came out this week.
And I gotta say, I thought that was a really good issue.
It's a particularly good issue.
There's a neat reveal that's one of those Tom Taylor bits that I was like, what a cool idea. I don't know if y'all liked it. I'm not gonna say what it is, of course. But the thing about Pa Kent.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
And his connection to somebody
I like
else.
That. I like that a lot.
And I was like, oh, what a cool idea. You know what I'm talking about, Nick, or did you read it?
I have not read it yet.
Okay, I won't say what it is.
Latest issue of Crossover, which can just get weirder. We do, if you miss Free Comic Book Day... We do still have a few of the free comics available to you. So we've got the Marvel selections, the Voices, the Avengers X-Men Eternals, and Spider-Man Venom. We have a limited selection of those. We've got the DC Dark Crisis, Crypto, and Galaxy. They're sort of YA. And we've got the Walking Dead, the Clementine, which is the...
Telltale
the,
Game
the new YA
character,
thing.
Right?
Yeah, from Tilly Walden, who's done On a Sunbeam and some other YA books. It also has a sample of a couple other books from Skybound's like YA line. They're going to be doing Machine Boy and Sea Serpent's Heir.
Yeah, I was just flipping through it, and I was like, oh, the art looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I need to give that a read.
And then there's the DC Book of Lists.
This is an actual book containing kind of what it sounds like, but they are sort of tongue-in-cheek lists of DC-themed things.
So
Randy,
I'm going to grab a few here randomly.
Yeah,
so basically, it's got tons of art throughout. It's basically a bunch of, like... So, for example, I looked in the middle page, but on page 100, Music Masters. Broken down by brass, electronic, multiple instruments, strings, and vocals. and has a list of characters and what they do. So, for strings, they've got Battle Axe, the Four-Armed Freak, Dominion on a Double-Neck Guitar, the Fiddler, Super Hip, Todd Wallander, Jute Fruss's guitar compelled people to dance uncontrollably. I don't even know what that means.
These are deep dives to get these lists. All right, let's hear a few other lists.
Another one. Let's see. We've got a list of various Justice League headquarters.
Okay.
List of Bruce Wayne's ancestors.
Okay, so some of these are like not all completely goofy.
The Batman's contingency plans.
This would be some good deep dives, by the way, for a trivia game.
The many adventures of Donna Troy, or many origins of Donna Troy.
Oh man.
A list of sleuths, gumshoes, and private eyes.
Right.
There was one I found that was the like. What would happen when you come home and there's at least four times that some people come to the door and Darkseid's just sitting in their living room,
going all the way back to the original Jack Kirby stories.
Yeah.
But I know at least one of those. It was Justice League International because I was reading that comic at the time, and Oberon walks through the door and Darkseid is just sitting in there, drinking tea or wine or something like that. And and it's apparently a thing.
There's also the many transformations of Jimmy Olsen.
Oh yeah,
DC's Primates. Legacy of Starman. This is a super fun book of like bits of bits of trivia.
I feel like this
little things about DC.
I feel like this would be a great one to just have sitting around on a coffee table to just regale your friends with the weirdest shit from DC, or to give to kids because you know kids know all this crazy lore from cartoons and video games and stuff like that, but they probably don't know some of this stuff.
There's also a 2-page spread about body art.
Okay.
Jimmy Olsen hallucinated that the mad tattoo artist covered him in multiple Superman tributes.
What a nightmare.
Anyway, this is a super fun little book.
Yeah, that's cool. And like, kind of different from the normal thing.
Yeah. Alright, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Strange New Worlds and Doctor Strange and other normal things. All right, we're going to start off with a dual spoiler warning here for all things Strange.
Yes.
If you have not seen Strange New Worlds, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, you should stop this podcast, immediately go buy Paramount Plus and watch it.
Yep.
That is the non-spoiler version. It's great. You should see it.
Right, and it's also like it's both a callback to kind of classic Trek, but it's not a throwback as far as like they threw out like the progress and stuff that they've made. It doesn't feel like Grandpa's Star Trek.
No.
It's
very
good
modern
stuff. Yep. And then likewise for Strange, you may already just know this through the grapevine, but there's like lots of reveals and secrets and Easter eggs and stuff like that,
and people are not being careful about spoilers
not remotely. I know that at least one of those things was like trending on Twitter, it would be so easy to find it, so if you're gonna catch this movie you probably want to do it fast.
All right, let's talk about Strange New Worlds first.
Okay.
Because I know, Dave, you haven't really talked about it much. It's only you have a whole separate other podcast where you did talked about it for hours.
Yes. Go watch Text Trek, people, or listen to Text Trek. We do podcasts. We do a live stream on Friday nights, which becomes the podcast, and there's a video cast on YouTube. And last week we covered the finale of Picard and the first episode of Strange New Worlds.
Which everybody liked.
And not only did everybody like in the podcast, but like I have seen almost across the board, as much as I've ever seen any new Star Trek thing, good reviews.
I have one Facebook friend who thought it was boring, and I've almost unfriended him over it.
And that's a weird complaint.
It is. He's an old grumpy man. So.
Yeah, it's a weird one.
Yep.
But yeah, people who like current Trek seem to like it.
Yep.
People who don't like current Trek seem to like it.
Yep.
It seems like they were able to hit all the right notes.
Yeah, I really like Discovery and Picard, uneven though they may be. I know you are more mixed on it than
more
I
mixed,
am.
More mixed,
yeah. I know, Nick, you sort of fell off both of them, right?
I have.
Yeah.
Especially after like all the spoilers coming out about Picard, like every episode, people were just blabbing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. That kind of...
Yeah.
Deflates me a little bit.
It's worth watching. The second season was really good.
Yeah, you should get at least through... You should watch it, I think.
Well, the finale thing that happened got spoiled for me, and I was like, really?
You'd still enjoy it. You don't care about spoilers.
I care a little bit.
Well, then you shouldn't have been watching it.
I mean, I can't help that I'm looking at Facebook, and people are blabbing.
Look away!
Yeah, people are really bad about spoilers on it.
Yeah. Well, the Star Trek themselves, like, on their website... There's essentially, I feel like, two particularly big things that happen in the finale, and both of them have been heavily featured openly on, like, Star Trek's website.
This is going to sound kind of harsh, though. I don't think there's a lot to spoil about Strange New Worlds. There are elements that are cool, but there's nothing like ginormous. This is just a really well-made hour of television that kind of explores Pike in a more nuanced way than we got on Discovery.
Yeah. So let's just quick say what the premise here is. I'm going to do the quick historical recap. Captain Pike was originally going to be the captain of the Enterprise in the 60s. They did a pilot. It didn't go over well with viewers. And so they cast William Shatner instead, and it's been Kirk ever since.
Right.
But Pike was kept around as like a historical character. He was made to be the captain of the Enterprise before Kirk was. That was just like a bit of lore. And on Star Trek Discovery, they returned to the character recently, played by Anson Mount. And people were really liking how he portrayed him. Yep. He kind of brought this kind of 60s right stuff attitude, but with a sense of humor, while also being kind of progressive and cool.
Yep.
He was so well liked that they probably had spin-off stuff in notion, but like fans were like, yes, spin this off. And
you can definitely call this when the fans demanded, like, this fan outcry for this was they wanted this.
Yeah, all over the place, and now it happened. So this is 3 years later they made it happen. So this is set in just a few years before Kirk's time. It is the Enterprise. It has Spock on it. It has Uhura, mm-hmm. and we're probably going to see some other familiar faces. Nurse Chapel is on there, and he was only in like an episode or two. But Dr. Mbenga was a doctor,
and number one, she was also on the show.
She was in the original pilot too. But most of these people are who had smaller roles, like Uhura will surely, she's probably already gotten more character development in one mm-hmm. episode than she had in like the whole original Star Trek series.
A fill-in new number one in this one as well.
Yeah, that's right. They had to
because the big plot arc is
right. Let's
that...
go ahead and say, there's this kind of a thing where Pike in the Star Trek episode he was back in the day. Got severely injured, essentially bound to a wheelchair, mute, burned, very badly injured.
Living death kind of stuff, iron lung type stuff.
Yeah,
basically.
And he, although there's a little bit more to it than that, they did an interesting thing on Discovery with his appearance, which is he, through some sort of prophetic crystal type thing, was able to glimpse that, and so now we find out that he knows that that is going to happen to him in about 10 years.
I mean, he outright says he knows the date and time that happened.
It was more than that. He was like a Klingon time crystal, and he got it, and
he felt the death.
He had to choose it.
Oh, right.
Remember, that was like that was the thing. Yeah. It was like
I did forget that
they needed this crystal to do something. I don't remember exactly what, but like he had to choose to lock in this future for himself in order to save the day, and he did it. Which was the big heroic thing. So basically, he chose his own death,
right?
But he now is living with the consequences of that.
Yeah, and when the show begins, although this character is a very sort of can-do character, he is clearly essentially on leave, sort of not sure if he wants to go back to like Starfleet.
He's hiding a little bit.
Well, because he's kind of thinking that maybe if he doesn't go back to Starfleet, he can avoid this future.
Right. He's living in his cabin. He's not like a broken shell of a man or anything. He's got a girl staying with him.
Another captain.
They have a good relationship, like a good casual sex relationship.
Friends with benefits.
Yeah, absolutely.
FFWB.
but there's not much that would drag him out except his first officer,
Una
has been, has disappeared.
First contact mission.
Yeah, and it's a weird one because the... they thought that basically they don't do first contact until civilizations develop warp drive. It's like, you got to get at least this good before we risk, letting you into the Galactic Empire.
Yep.
And
these guys didn't, but they had warp technology somehow.
I liked that reveal.
And there's a neat mystery, which I guess
there's no reason to spoil that one. But I did like it. I like the way
they've
they
developed
that
something
in.
That's not quite warp technology, but is kind of scarier. And
It is a world. This is. So it's kind of the same thing that Picard did that I think that really I really liked was it's in a, despite being set in the thir- in the like whatever what a century century
let's say. See this is going to be the 24th century or 23rd century I think
23rd century so despite being set in the 23rd century they wanted to reflect stuff that's going on now, and so what they did in Picard, they had them time travel back. In this, they have found an alien civilization that is very much like humanity where it is right now.
Right. You know, you anybody who's seen Star Trek Next Generation knows, you know, or the original Trek, there was a fair number of planets that had like humans or humanoid-type creatures on it. And they even did a storyline where there was explained that there is a sort of a godlike alien that sort of seeded worlds once upon a time, and that's why there's so many humanoid-type races. Obviously, in reality, it's like a budget thing.
But
you can film real.
The exploration of a society that is basically on it's on the brink of a civil war. One of them has a very devastating weapon, and that they sort of solve it with the promise of, hey, you're going to get to a better place, and we can show you how. Was something I really need to see right now.
Yeah, yeah. This civilization close to us, they look a little different. Their technology is a little different, but man, otherwise it's us.
Yeah,
and that could have been hokey, but that's like a long-standing Trek trope, like I said,
and it's
done
well.
Did it great.
Yeah.
They did it great. I think you liked it, Nick.
Yeah, very much so.
But also beyond just the plot being really good and the themes of it being really good, all their character work is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Their Nurse Chapel and Dr. Mbenga have maybe my favorite running plot, where basically they have to beam a couple people from the civilization who they're not supposed to know about the first contact protocol. They're not supposed to know.
Right, so they were beamed up to the Enterprise unconscious, a couple of the aliens of this world.
And then they're supposed to keep them sedated, and one of them immediately wakes up, and Chapel has to basically run him down in the corridors.
Yeah, yeah, it is a fun bit that also manages to do a cool thing with Uhura in it, show how quick she is on the uptake and how she like studies like the culture and not just their language.
And sees that she's a good communicator.
I loved the Spock stuff.
Oh, before you say that, I want to quick mention something about Nurse Chapel.
Yeah.
Nurse Chapel, they like rethought her slightly and gave her a focus. She is actually about like sort of genetic alterations, low-level genetic alterations to better blend with aliens in like first contact and away team missions and stuff like that. So she's going to be like a specialist in like sort of alien cultures and stuff, it seems like.
Genetics. I think that's going to come into play. And I think that's a good specialization to give her. And I do wonder if that's going to tie into Khan at all.
Yeah, because we know that the security officer is a ancestor of his.
Yeah, Lana Khan.
Yeah, Leon.
Leana?
Leon. It's Leon.
That's right. A lot of apostrophes in Star Trek.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's Leon or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Minion Singh.
Yep. And so Nick, you were saying about Spock.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the sort of new aspects. I mean, I guess they're not new. He was supposed to have a
betrothed.
Yeah, betrothed.
Yeah.
But, like, you had never seen anything except, essentially, when that happened in the original series, he had to go back to Vulcan. Everybody knows this famous thing where, because of some weird Vulcan rituals, Kirk and Spock end up fighting each other in an arena kind of scenario. And you're like, oh, this woman is kind of manipulates him Game of Thrones style into this because she's trying to, like, maneuver, doing some political maneuvering. And and you're like, oh, she seemed like a pretty bad person in that. But it looks like they kind of want to bring some nuance to her because she and Spock are not at odds in this.
No, very much not.
No.
They are at on a romantic dinner.
Verbally sparring with each other. Yeah. Querying and questioning.
Yep. And at one point, they lean forward for a kiss that scandalizes the Vulcan server, who's like, I need you to leave the restaurant.
That was pretty great. But I also just love his interactions with Pike. I think they have a good rapport.
Well, yeah, like, you know, I was talking about this with my brother, and he mentioned a thing where, like, Spock is like, something seems to be troubling you. And Pike straight up tells him what it is.
Yeah.
It's not one of those things where he's like, it's okay, I'm all right. He doesn't try and shoulder through it. He just tells his close friend.
Well, he's also one of the only people he can tell.
Because of the I like that. The discovery thing and the time crystals and all that stuff is such a classified thing that even the Admiral has to, like, go and get special dispensation to hear about it.
Yep. Yeah.
So he can't talk to anybody except the people who are there. Spock, Una.
Like,
those are the only people he can know.
Is that although I think it would be cool for people to go and watch that season of Discovery, at least, as you know, if you're going to get Paramount Plus for this, which you should, you should see Pike's earlier appearances and find out his backstory. But if you don't and you watch this, all you need to know is that there's like some classified info, and they'll tell you this in the show.
They make it very clear.
That only a few people know about. And you learn all the stuff you need to know.
Yeah.
And then, like, that's. There is a sense that they are going to do what I had really been hoping they would be able to pull off, which is it's broadly going to be episodic with either like maybe one or two parters. They'll go to different alien worlds and experience cool and strange things and have an adventure. But the character arcs and stuff, of course, will be a more serial format. They'll grow and change kind of in a way that really wasn't an option for, like, the original Star Trek series or Next Generation.
Yeah.
But you also get to see Spock's sexy chest, Nick. You didn't get around to that.
Oh, can we talk about the look of this show, though?
Yeah.
The new Enterprise looks fantastic. It looks like the classic Enterprise, but, like, with... like shined up a little bit.
Sure, it's they've literally changed some stuff on it.
The uniforms look great. All the sets look fantastic. Like, this looks great.
Yeah, you know, these days Trek has a lot of money behind the shows, like a crazy amount of money.
Yeah.
Picard has the most money. I think I've heard Fathery say that.
It does, but
shows
it
the least.
Yeah, because this one. Looks, I mean, this is probably the best, and I love Discovery.
Now, this is the first episode. I'm sure they were putting a little extra oomph into it.
Yeah,
but yeah, there's like so much cool stuff. But yeah, Randy, you were talking about just how you kind of needed to see the story at the moment, and I think Pike is the kind of captain who will be good for that, because he's a guy who is both like a perfect example of positive masculinity, non-toxic masculinity, where you've got a guy who is both like kind of a tough, cool guy.
Yeah,
he's, you know, he's a little bit of a what would you call it? His self-reliant guy who likes to live out in his cabin and stuff.
I mean, yeah, he's a guy from Montana. He's a cowboy type.
Yeah, but he's a guy who hugs his best friend, or like his good friend, the doctor, when he sees him, who can tell Spock something intimate about himself. Yep. And he'd kind of open up his heart to an alien people about an existential fear that he's got, that we barely made it through in Trek lore.
Yeah.
You know, sort of a World War III stuff. And the show has to be able to sell you on that sincerity, and that's a difficult thing to do. You know, when you're going to have like one episode, and you're going to have to resolve some plot points in it. Obviously, it can be done from Doctor Who to CSI and Law and Order shows have been doing it, but it hasn't been a Trek tradition since the relaunch. And this bodes well for what they're going to do.
It might sound sacrilegious, but it reminded me of the Seth MacFarlane, like they did one shot.
Seth MacFarlane. You're talking about the Orville?
The Orville. Yeah. I mean, they would do one and dones.
Right, they were very modeled on the original Star Trek and Next Generation.
Yeah. I think there's always a big debate about, you know, which is the better captain, Picard or Kirk.
Yeah.
And honestly, just in the little bits, Anson Mount's Pike has quickly moved up to be maybe my favorite captain of the Enterprise.
Well, he gets to be kind of a more thoughtful Captain Kirk. By literally kind of like he's set in Kirk's era, so he gets some of that energy, but he gets a little bit of modern nuance.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty cool. He's going to rise through the ranks. I see, by the way, why so many, now that I'm watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine, why so many people like Sisko.
Yeah.
He's kind of in a unique position and doesn't have, like, traditional captain-y stuff to do.
He's an administrator as much as he's a captain.
Right. He does get the captain's rank and stuff like that, and he sees stuff that they don't. But I see why people like him. It's interesting to me. And I like, actually, that Trek has such a sort of a diverse variety of captains. Like, I actually like all the captains.
Yeah, me too.
Were there any good Easter eggs that you saw? I mean, of course, they talked more about the Gorn.
Right, they referenced the Gorn a little bit. Potentially, that's a slight issue for fans and canon stuff, because the Gorn are not supposed to have ever been seen by anybody until Kirk's time, which is many years off. Not many years, but like 10 years off. But at the same time, there's a little bit of an out, because like the data he was looking at was like, there's you know, referred to unconfirmed reports about the Gorn. There's may not be like straight eyewitness people or people who've survived them.
Yeah.
They're a scary kind of threat, like in, you know, like the outer reaches.
Yeah.
There were some Easter eggs in there.
Did I hear that one of the ships was the Stamets?
Yep, but although that could either be a reference to Stamets from Discovery, probably, or the actual scientist named Stamets who inspired him.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I hadn't considered that.
He has the same name as the mycologist.
Because I assumed that they basically said that all the people on Discovery were killed, right?
Yeah, but it's sort of too early to have named a ship after him.
Maybe. Yeah, especially since that technology was secretive, they wouldn't want his name out there, probably.
They don't want his name out there, yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know if they... by the way, there was like the Vulcan Lake they were overlooking.
Yeah.
I just found out about this today. We actually missed it for the podcast because we usually cover the Easter eggs, which we call Gorn eggs. even when they're not about Gorns, they're Gorn eggs.
Sure.
There is an episode of Voyager where Tuvok is like saying, I don't know if it's a poem or if he's just remembering, but he mentions this specifically, the beautiful shores of some Vulcan lake or sea.
Uh-huh.
And that was it.
That's it.
That was mentioned.
Interesting.
There's also the Kirk thing. Oh, man. Did they fake us all out on that, right? They did say they cast somebody as Lieutenant Kirk.
No, they did.
So here's the thing. In season two, there is going to be James T. Kirk.
Okay, all right. Okay.
There is another sort of Kirk in this that shows.
Didn't he appear in one episode of the original series
he
as well?
Did. Yep. He did.
Wasn't it his last episode?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, you could even say he didn't get any lines because his first shot is deceased. It's actually a perfect example of how sort of a drawback to the old school episodic format, because back in those days, Kirk's brother, Sam, was introduced only to have him dead, and for Kirk to be sad about it in the moment, but never mentioned again, because that was just how episodes were back then.
That brother I lost. I hadn't thought about him. And
Easy come, easy go. But anyway, let's shall we move on to the other strange things? This is clearly a recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Yes, spoilers. If you haven't seen Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness or been spoiled on Twitter, because people on Twitter are jerks.
Yep, get out of there.
You should go. I think two of the three of us would definitely say you should go watch it.
Yes.
The third one of us might warn you off in the most stringent of terms.
No, what I would do would be to say you should probably go watch this because most people are enjoying it.
I tried to tamp down his expectations.
You did a good job, and yet I still was saddened by it.
I didn't bother. He was going to like it or he wasn't. And he didn't, and he's wrong. I think none of us here are like... I think the three of us... You are the biggest fan of this first Doctor Strange, Nick, right?
Yes.
And that you liked it?
I enjoyed it. I think it is kind of a flawed film, but...
Yeah. How many stars did you give it on Letterboxd?
I want to say I gave it like 3.5.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were like, it's a 4.
No, I don't think it reached 4. I think
crap.
It was like...
So the original movie, I like Benedict Cumberbatch. I felt like the first movie didn't do a lot of things very well. I didn't like their magic at all. I felt it was way too small.
The magic felt, like it was in a box. Like, it only could do
like, they did some
things.
Neat visuals, but it was like, it was kind of boring magic.
The only time it felt like Doctor Strange was when he was given, like, that run-through of all the different kind of nuttery of that the Ancient One sends him through.
Yeah, for, like, 5 seconds.
For 5 seconds. It's like a minute, but,
But then, like, every time Doctor Strange would make a guest appearance...
He's great.
Whether it was, like, Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok.
The Avengers Endgame.
Yeah. And more like Doctor Strange.
It was... he was great. He was kind of... He's a great counterpoint to people, I think, sometimes. He's a great foil for other people. He was great as the, like, guy who... You know, with the friction between him and Tony Stark and all that, or Loki getting pissed at him.
Yep.
Anyway, so here we are on the second Doctor Strange movie with some of that stuff to inform it. And so, what did y'all think about Doctor Strange now?
So I think I thought this worked great. It's a Sam Raimi movie as much as it is a Marvel movie.
Yeah, I agree.
And it is very horrific. I think one of the issues that people have had, that I think is a reasonable issue, is that this is the first moment where you can't just take kids to.
It's still PG-13.
It is, but it's pushing hard against that PG-13. Like, the violence and the language that maybe... I mean, there's no nudity, and the language is pretty tamped down. But the violence is disturbing. Like, there's a couple of really brutal deaths, and it is scary. Like, they do... If you don't like horror movies, this is a movie I don't know that I would recommend to people.
I don't know if I felt it was that horror-y.
Well, you watch a ton of horror.
Yeah, but I've seen like Nick, you've seen Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah.
It's like not like as intense as that. It has his kind of the campy horror sort of elements of Evil Dead. And there is some serious horror. Like, I know about the deaths you're talking about. To me, it didn't seem quite that intense.
I get the horror comparison. It's not quite horror. It's like Sam Raimi light horror.
It's the same horror as like Evil Dead or Army of Darkness.
But even a kid is going to look at that and be a little freaked out.
That's what I'm saying.
And it's not the tone of the other Marvel movies.
If you're at all susceptible, if you're a person who's squeamish about horror movies, and I know a lot of people are, or, if you've been taking your kids to every Marvel movie, even as dark as...
Endgame?
Infinity War and Endgame were, they were kind of dark where it either would go over kids' heads because it was more existential.
Yeah.
Or, they got the, all the Avengers died, but then they came back.
This
movie
is very visual.
this is like people getting impaled on fence posts. And, a little bit of body horror in there.
Yep.
And, kids in danger. Like, it is, and brutal, brutal murders with magic.
Yeah.
So it is quite dark. I, as a freak, loved all that shit.
Yeah.
And, I was super on board with this. I like Doctor Strange's more smart-ass bit, and he gets to sort of have fun with that.
Benedict Cumberbatch gets to have fun because he gets to play like four or five different versions of himself.
Yeah.
And they all have a through line, but they're also all kind of different too, which is fun.
So I think one of the things that I'm not sure if it, when I left the theater, I was super happy about this, and it ranks pretty high for me in Marvel.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I see people who don't like it, and they're talking about the flaws of it. I am wondering how much of it will stick with me, because I think a lot of what I really loved about this was the surprises reveals it had to offer. And it had a lot of surprises to offer. And I think in this day and age, if you can keep your secrets, that is worth noting. And I think they did a good job here of, like, the identity of the villain is secret.
Yep.
And they managed to hide it in plain sight. Like, if you look at this trailers, it hints at it.
Yeah,
but they don't tell, they don't flat out tell you.
I mean, we're talking about spoilers, right? So
we can talk about spoilers, yeah.
Right. So, like, yes, I assumed that Scarlet Witch would play a role in this.
I thought she was going to be an ally. I thought this was going to be her redemption story.
Right. So we all thought, like, Nightmare or...
Yeah, arguably that was one of the key things I didn't like, was that it was not her redemption story. Yeah. And was, in fact, a further damnation story.
We'll talk about the Scarlet Witch, because that is one of my gripes as well. But I think that because they had sort of hinted at being Nightmare, or they talk about dreams, they deliberately did some of that stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We all assumed, oh, there's some kind of like CGI version of Nightmare, like they haven't cast it.
Even as I was watching it, I was like, they have said the word dream 800 times in this movie. Where is Nightmare?
I think they were doing that because they wanted to set us up so we weren't ready for the Scarlet Witch reveal.
I gather this was changed enough over the course of weird pandemic shooting that for all I know, Nightmare was in it at
originally,
some point.
It could have been Nightmare was supposed to be a villain.
Yeah.
Ultimately, I think it works the way it does, although not maybe for Scarlet Witch's art, but it works for Doctor Strange.
And I'm going to argue against that, but
we'll get to that. A whole discussion. but that and the reveals of the Illuminati. I knew the Illuminati were in this because of stupid TV ads.
Yep.
Yeah, I knew about that like months ago.
Used the word, and I wish they hadn't.
I knew Xavier in the hover chair. I knew that was...
See, I didn't know any of that.
How'd you know about the hover chair?
It was shown in a short.
I saw the trailer you're talking about.
Okay.
I saw the trailer you were talking about, because I saw the trailer, Nick, and it's on Facebook. It's like a regular trailer Marvel Studios is running.
And
it shows the yellow wheelchair, and it shows Captain Marvel, and it shows Peggy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why? The only thing it didn't show was Reed. And I'm like, why did you give all of that away?
I know. I was a little annoyed.
There was no need to do it.
That I knew those two things.
Yeah, I guess they were kind of thinking, it's like, oh, well, people will think they know everything, and then we'll whammy.
I mean, in the original trailer, we knew Patrick Stewart was in it.
Yeah, because you heard his voice.
We heard his voice.
Right.
And Patrick Stewart was like, no, that's not me. And
but
then
whatever,
he was like, it was
whatever
me.
Else, though, we didn't know the details of it. And so
that
Illuminati scene was huge for me, because I learned a few days before that Captain Carter was in it, which I wish I hadn't known, but I did. So then, and I'd learned that Black Bolt was in it.
See, I didn't know that, and I thought that was really cool, and I love that they brought Anson Mount back in.
When they're introducing the Illuminati, and we saw...
Anson Mount is the key between all things strange.
It's true.
We saw Captain Carter, and then we got that music sting and the yellow wheelchair, and I was like, oh, I had not seen that, so that was cool.
Yeah.
Then it saw Anson Mount, and then they revealed the new Captain Marvel, which, of course, was Lashana Lynch, who was Maria Rambeau, which I thought that was super cool. And then Reed Richards showed up, and I about freaked out.
Yeah.
Because I did not see that coming.
I didn't expect it. But previous to that Illuminati scene, they did the Christine thing where she was working for
the Baxter Foundation.
And I was like, oh, that's really cool. They're in the Baxter building, kind of. And I thought that was neat. To actually get Reed Richards was really, really cool.
And Krasinski, as expected, was a pretty great Reed Richards, I thought.
So the bearded Richards.
It was the bearded Richards. Yeah. And I don't think you cast John Krasinski in a three or...
You think he's their Reed Richards?
I think he's their Reed Richards.
Is there any question about that? I just assumed.
Yeah, people were definitely
saying... I guess he is an alternate universe.
Yeah, he's an alternate universe Reed, so...
Yeah, and this is definitely kind of weirdly the music sting for Xavier was the...
X-Men
animated,
92.
Animated series sting, mm-hmm. And I thought that was awesome. So this is that universe...
Yeah.
Universe 838, I think, is what they which is never...
We finally got 616
introduced
into the canon.
Which is... Yep. Went over my wife's head. She asked me what it
was,
and I was like, that's really cool.
Yep. And I think this may be one of the things, Dave, where it doesn't click with you the same way it did with me and Nick, is that I love all the little Easter eggs in the MCU.
Yeah.
I love how interconnected it is. And yes, I'm an easy mark when it comes to this. All you gotta do is a few things like that, and I'll forgive. If Venom, crap movie that it is, one of the worst movies ever made, I've never seen it. If Venom had a bit in it where they gave an Easter egg that tied into the MCU in a good way, it could probably win me over.
I think I like, you know, I don't like crossover type stories in general in comics, like Crisis on Infinite Earths and stuff like that.
And I love that.
So, unfortunately, the Illuminati scene was one of those that just fell, I would say, completely flat for me.
Really?
I was like, I had like no excitement at all watching it.
And I
because,
think...
I was closer to a casual on this one. Yeah. Like, I'm like, never saw the What If, so I don't particularly care about Captain Carter. What do you call it? Who all else is in there?
Black Bolt.
Black Bolt, I thought was extremely underwhelming.
Xavier.
I mean, yeah, Patrick Stewart's always cool. I need them to like do something cool.
And you weren't invested in them, so when Water Wolf slaughtered them all, didn't move me.
Right. I felt like they were mostly there for exposition, and that they didn't get to like Reed didn't get to do anything cool. He didn't get to show me how smart or cool he was.
I liked him trying to talk Wanda down.
Yeah.
I actually really liked that moment.
It felt Reed.
I get what you're saying, Dave, but I think that may be where the heart of the discontent is, because if you're at that point and weren't feeling it, then that movie's not connecting at all at that point. And I think that's probably the case.
Yeah, mostly I was just like, I kind of like wasn't really that big on board the plot, which kind of felt like one of those crossovers of bouncing around. Like, I need the story beats to be like really intriguing to me. The just random example, in Ant-Man, when Falcon showed up, I loved that.
Yeah.
The surprise appearance of Falcon in it. Because it was like a very witty scene, and it was a fun, energetic action scene. To me, like, that scene was much more lively than, say, the Illuminati one. But also, I was like, I don't know quite what they're intending with the Illuminati here. I wasn't quite sure how they wanted me to perceive them. Because, like, in the comic, they're kind of like a watchword sort of a cautionary tale.
They're behind the scenes where you're going to try to control things. It was a weird fit for any of the Marvel heroes to be part of that. And I did not care for it.
In the comics. Me neither.
I always expect the MCU to take a bad idea and turn it into something good.
Same.
Because they've taken Civil War, they've taken things that I just find stupid or redundant or more Mark Miller than anything else.
Yeah.
I thought that's what they had done with, say, Scarlet Witch, because I thought WandaVision was a good treatment of Wanda as a person who has a sort of a breakdown on the meta scale. I didn't like where they took it with this one, because I think it kind of pushed it so far that that I don't think that viewers will, like, essentially forgive her ever.
So let's talk about the Wanda of it all.
Okay.
When she first shows up and he goes to her for help.
Yeah.
I thought I was expecting a completely different scene.
Yeah, I was
like,
too.
He's talking to her and she's like, and they're basically talking about magic and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, so she's going to come. It's going to be this traveling through the multiverse with Wanda and Doctor Strange and America Chavez. And then she says her name. And I don't know if you caught it.
I caught it immediately.
I did. Just like Strange, I'm like, wait a minute, he never said the name.
Yeah.
And then she catches it, and I thought that was a fantastic bit from her where she's like, you never said the name, did you? Which, I've seen a version of that numerous times.
It is a classic trope that I would say usually works.
And I thought
if it's done well, it usually works.
And she just like, she's like, busted. And then the whole thing goes dark, and I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
And so, and that bit, I think that for me, Dave, is like, it's whether you're plugged in or not, but...
Right, arguably that's where my interest started to wane, and that's pretty early.
And that is what flipped me into the movie.
Interesting.
Because I was like, holy shit, this movie's not at all what I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Well, because the opening couple of scenes is the cold open, which is the Defender Doctor Strange trying to get to the Book of Ashanti.
Love that look, by the way.
Yeah, it was a cool look. And then America Chavez ports into our world, and then there's Shuma-Gorath with Shuma-Gorath.
Yep.
And then so that was fairly early for you to kind of check out.
I will say this, we're slightly like a wild roller coaster. The opening scene where they're running through dimensions and stuff like that, that was almost like too, like, because I had no grounding for it yet, I was like, I'm not really feeling this. I feel like they just hit me with a bunch of CG right out of the gates, and I don't care about it yet. But then, by the time they got to Shuma-Gorath showing up, I was like, okay, I'm kind of seeing Strange again, and they've kind of got it down to earth. And then they had what I thought was a really cool battle with Shuma-Gorath, where he was doing all kinds of magic, cool stuff.
I love the sound effect buzzsaw, and it's a really good
action scene.
Also.
So I was on board for a brief moment there.
Their version of Wong is more interesting than any version they've ever done in the comics. They gave Wong so much more agency and made him his own character. Yeah.
I mean, arguably, Wong was like a less interesting Alfred, a character clearly invented to be a servant to the main character.
Yep.
And Alfred has grown over the years, and I know Wong had too.
Yeah, he has. There's good stuff with him, but he's a different role.
Yeah, it's just like, they really probably never would have considered the he becomes Sorcerer Supreme, which was a really neat bit.
Yeah. But I like Tom Wong, how much in the Shuma-Gorath fight, and later on, I think Wong gets to get some really cool moments. He is a fully developed character of his own.
Yeah, completely. And Benedict Wong is amazing.
Yeah.
He's also kind of good at sort of disarming Doctor Strange's pomposity.
Yes.
Because he's kind of like, he will knock him down at the drop of a hat.
The bowing thing.
Usually,
people would bow to the Sorcerer Supreme.
But I think for me that I was super into it at that point of like.
But I'm asking you a question. Do you feel that this turn of events destroys or kind of negates the Scarlet Witch from WandaVision?
Yes.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Which is to say that she sort of achieved a sort of forgiveness by the end of that, but it was hard fought, and I know that some people, you know, I saw this in comments and stuff like that. Some people were like, you know, this, by the way, I feel always was tinged with misogyny. We're like, I could never forgive her. She tortured those people. And I'm like, I think sometimes when you take superhero stuff like very face value, yes, something like that seems pretty awful. But if you kind of enjoy superheroes as big metaphors for real things, like this is about like a person who had a breakdown and like almost like burned bridges with friends and people around her. But like I would read it almost on the same level as I would for that somebody doing that in real life, where it's like, yeah, that's a bad thing. That's a really bad thing. If you could somehow find it in yourself to reach out and help them and try and undo what you had done, then I would forgive it. But if you be very literal, it's like, oh, it was like for a year of their life, they were suffering.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you go that route, then yeah, it was horrible and monstrous and you can never forgive her. I don't really interpret it that way. I don't think they want you to think of her as that vile.
Yeah.
And so, but it was a hard-fought win. And then I do feel like by having her go evil, that she can only be redeemed in kind of in the way Vader was, which was to say Vader was like redeemed to Luke at the end, but like I don't exactly expect to see anybody like teaming up if he returned.
If they reveal that Chthon was basically in control of her, it's still going to be a hard sell.
I mean, they outright say that.
They don't say that.
They do. She's corrupted by the Darkhold. She's
corrupted by it, but he's not the one. He's not driving her.
Yeah,
to
people
do these
will
things.
Be like, oh, she was weak willed. She couldn't handle the power.
No, Chthon is Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Basically exerting...
Was that in the movie?
Yeah.
Because no, Chthon was in the movie.
Yeah. Exerting like, influence through the Darkhold. They outright say that.
They do, but they don't... Like, it is still her will. It is still her doing
she
all
this has become
stuff.
Fixated on one thing, and the Darkhold has told her how to get that and corrupted her mind and influence.
You're giving a lot of credit, Nick. I don't think that that's in the movie. I think they're going to have to really sell that later.
Oh, I think it was in the movie. I mean, her entire body was changed by the Darkhold. Her fingertips were black.
Well, in the same sense that, like, you know how, like, Gandalf was offered the ring, and he's like, no, he's like, I couldn't, he's like, it would be too dangerous in my hands. I won't even hold it. Like, we've seen many, many fictional stories about people who are able to resist power. Most of the time, that is the story, is finding somebody who can in some way resist it.
Yeah.
She arguably has failed to resist it twice.
Yeah, I think, I'll say this for her, I think she makes a great villain. But I was disappointed because I do think it's a hard thing to come back from.
I don't think she's a villain. I don't think...
I mean, she does brutally murder a whole lot of people.
She does.
So, yeah, that's pretty villainous.
I mean, under influence and control of an extra-dimensional demon...
People are not real forgiving when that happens with women.
No, they're not.
In Star Trek Picard Season 1, Alison Pill killed somebody under the influence of like a post-hypnotic Vulcan mind meld suggestion.
People hate her forever.
They're going to hate her forever. Some people will hate her forever.
Yeah.
Right, and that's the thing. I mean...
But I also think, like, I'm like, they kind of went down the road again. I don't think it will be very easy to pull her back. She, like, even if she saves the world, like...
Well, she ultimately does save countless lives.
She kind of did the die to save them tradition.
Yeah, I don't think she's dead.
Probably not.
No,
you can't kill her. She's too powerful.
I mean, I'll say this. The Marvel writers have like, done some really impressive things, some impressive narrative tricks in the past. You know, even making something like Endgame with all its time-hopping work and be very emotionally satisfying. So, they might... I would say the odds are against them to make Wanda a viable character again. Certainly, I feel like I'm never going to get what I wanted, which was her and Vision being able to return to some semblance of life.
Yeah, they clearly were never...
She is Dark Phoenix now.
The Wanda and Vision happy couple thing all happened off camera.
Right.
Like, that was all in between. Like, a lot of the really interesting stuff between Infinity War and Endgame... No. Civil War and Infinity War. There's, like, 3 or 4 years of story there that we just... We never got to see.
Right.
And that's kind of a shame. We never got to see. Because it's not where the drama is.
No.
Everybody was fairly happy. Everybody was... there wasn't...
We just get snippets.
But, like, you know, like... For I don't know, 5 years, 10 years in the Avengers, they were, you know, a couple who still went on adventures and stuff like that. Like, you can do that.
Yeah.
It's just that one where the movies decided to go.
I mean, it is a gripe I have. Overall, I really like... Because she was such a good villain for the movie... I'm willing to forgive that they kind of wrecked the character, in my opinion, for it.
Now, to not fixate on it too much, I'm going to throw out one other scene I really liked, which was an indicative of, like, just how they do their kind of action and effects, which was the music fight.
Yes, yeah. The music fight's great.
Really cool, visually inventive. Can't really think of anything else like it.
What did you think of the zombie Doctor Strange thing?
I kind of liked it.
I loved that. I loved it. I thought that was... First of all, it was one of those things where it's like, it was the Chekhov zombie.
Yeah.
Like, they had set it up, and I didn't see it.
Yeah.
And so I love...
I knew it was going to pay off in some way. I was 100% sure of it. I couldn't figure out how.
I didn't. I figured the whole point was to get her to the universe and to set up why she wouldn't trust him. And that was it. It served its purpose. So for them to have the zombie thing, I was like, that is what this movie did. And again, in looking back at it, maybe I won't like it as much because the surprise won't be there. But I think I will. Because they were able to do so many things that I didn't see coming. And I think if you can do that in a genre which I know pretty well and I'm usually able to predict where things are going, I'll forgive a lot. I think that is where it comes down for me.
I just kind of liked the manic kind of over the top ride.
What did you think of Bruce Campbell's cameo?
Oh, wonderful. It was hilarious. Like, I expected it to be. I knew he would be in there somewhere.
And it's a nice Evil Dead reference. His hands are attacking him.
Yep.
Also, great post-credit sequence.
I think the post-credit sequence and is setting up a lot because
I'm just talking about the one where he says it's over.
Oh yeah. Yep.
But also we got a surprise reveal of Clea.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Charlize Theron, who looks great.
Yep. She's getting into the MCU, which is awesome.
Yep.
We'll see if she brings it down like she did the Fast and Furious franchise.
Wasn't her fault. It's all Vin Diesel's fault.
Yeah, no, that's kind of true.
I kind of see where the MCU is going, and I could be wrong, and they'll outright, but with the incursions...
You think they're headed for Hickman's Avengers?
No, I think they're headed for Secret Wars.
Oh.
What that kind of looks like...
Multiversal Secret Wars?
Yes.
Yeah, you could do some fun stuff with
and
that.
And then at the end, they smash everything together.
Yeah.
And then we get kind of this
but
weird...
But that's Crisis on Infinite Earths. I don't want them to do that. I don't want them to end the multiverse.
I don't want them to end the multiverse either. And
I don't think they would do that because, I don't know, was the end result of Hickman's Secret Wars? They didn't do, the smashing the worlds together, did they?
No.
No.
And I don't think we're in Hickman's Secret Wars. I think it'll be a blend between...
Yeah, it'll be the blend of that and the original Secret Wars, whether or not we'll actually get the Beyonder. I mean, hell, we got the Living Tribunal in this.
I saw that. I saw Living Tribunal.
I did not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in there early on?
He's in when they were... flipping through all the dimensions.
Yeah,
one of the ones was
him.
The big living tribunal, and I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, I'm sure there's more Easter eggs I didn't see that are in this thing.
Unfortunately, any multiversal stuff sort of bodes poorly for me.
Yeah, it's... Well, Dave, you may be disappointed, because I think that is Phase 4.
That's Phase 4.
And maybe Phase 5, too.
I don't think... we'll see.
I think I would want, love for Reed to show up and for them to have, do Annihilus, who hasn't been done, and for that to lead into Annihilation so that they could do Guardian stuff and Nova stuff. But I don't want Reed as the guy who has the Council of Reeds or whose main thing is like some sort of Illuminati puppet master. I want Reed the Explorer and Adventurer.
I think that's what we're going to get. Did you notice Strange, when he sees him, says the Fantastic Four, weren't you guys big in the 60s?
Yeah.
So the MCU FF has been established as canon in 1960s.
Do we think that's what that was meant to
indicate? I think that's what that was meant to indicate. They've been that they were around and forgotten or something.
Yeah,
or
I could see
disappeared.
We talked about that possibility that they They were some brief thing, but like dimension hopped, and most of their adventures have been in another dimension or something.
I mean, if
so that they could do them as period characters.
If they do them as like basically Challenge of the Unknown type thing, mm-hmm. and then they go into the negative zone, and that's where they get their powers. I know that's what the second Fox movie did,
yeah.
but they just fucked it up.
Right.
But as a concept, it's not bad.
No, but we'll see some sort of version. And
All I know is that when I see a Marvel movie, what I want is something that opens the world a little bit and gives me a chance to speculate on what's going to happen next.
Well, it's kind of nice to see you so embracing the Phase 4, because you were not.
Phase 4 started with Black Widow, which is a flashback, Shang-Chi, which is a very different movie that is pretty self-contained.
Yeah. It's kind of Iron
Man-ish. And Eternals, which is boring as hell.
I disagree, but
I know,
okay.
But it is. And Dave's going to watch it and like it better than Doctor Strange.
Oh, he's definitely going to like it.
Oh, I'm definitely not going to watch it.
But this is the first one that felt... This and Spider-Man are the first ones that felt like... Okay,
big MCU?
I see it's bigger. Yeah, and that's what I want. I want either bigger or really, really... Like, I'm not sure what Ms. Marvel's going to be. It may be more self-contained. Like, Moon Knight's self-contained, but in a way that I found interesting.
Yeah.
And you got to do one or the other. And Eternals or Shang-Chi could have done that. I don't think either one really quite did it.
Although it introduced Wong as the Sorcerer Supreme.
Don't get me wrong. I like Shang-Chi quite a bit, but I don't think it was like as strong as the rest of the Marvel.
Don't get him Wong.
Don't get me Wong.
I'm weirdly just excited that the Inhumans do exist.
Well, they did.
Well, no.
They may have killed them all in that universe.
Well, if they exist in that universe, they exist everywhere.
Yeah, that's fair.
And because anyway. American Chavez is
but I guess
the only
that means that they
the...
could do a rethink of him, and then if they wanted those, still bring back Anson Mount some way,
yeah,
you know.
Sure.
He looked good.
He did.
The updated costume looked good.
His death was brutal.
Yeah, his death was very brutal.
Anyway, I really love this. This is a lot of what I've been liking about.
I weirdly think it snuck into my top 10.
It's not in my top 10, but it's in my top 20.
Interesting. Did not make my top 10.
I think it's at the bottom.
Oh, it's at my bottom. Yes, correct. That's right.
Below Thor: The Dark World.
Yeah, that's true. And Iron Man 3.
Oh God. All right. That's our thoughts. I'm sure we have more. I'm sure we'll be talking about this for weeks.
No doubt.
That'll do it for us this week. And until next time,
yo Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.